It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Secretary Clinton, thank you very much for coming tonight. As a naval flight officer, I held a top secret sensitive compartmentalized information clearance, and that provided me access to materials and information highly sensitive to our warfighting capabilities. Had I communicated this information not following prescribed protocols, I would have been prosecuted and imprisoned. Secretary Clinton, how can you expect those such as myself who were and are entrusted with America's most sensitive information to have any confidence in your leadership as president when you clearly corrupted our national security?
Well, I appreciate your concern and also your experience, but let me try to make the distinctions that I think are important for me to answer your question. First, as I said to Matt, you know and I know, classified material is designated, it is marked, there is a header so that there is no dispute at all that what is being communicated to or from someone who has that access is marked classified. And what we have here is the use of an unclassified system by hundreds of people in our government to send information that was not marked. There were no headers. There was no statement, top secret, secret, or confidential. I communicated about classified material on a wholly separate system. I took it very seriously. When I traveled, I went into one of those little tents that I'm sure you've seen around the world because we didn't want there to be any potential for someone to have embedded a camera to try to see whatever it is that I was seeing that was designated, marked, and headed as classified.
Let us
know. So I did exactly what I should have done, and I take it very seriously. Always have, always will.
Well, now that was part of the exchange last night at the Commander-in-Chief Forum, sponsored by NBC with the host Matt Lauer, who's taken some hits because he wasn't harder on Donald Trump. Matt actually gave Hillary a pretty good run for her money on the email. And I, before I get into that, could I just say how good she is? Wow, is she good? You know, you listen to that and you think, man, she didn't do anything wrong. She just explained that. Of course, maybe we forgot that yesterday her husband's aide, one of his aides, took a device and hammered two of her cell phones to death into oblivion. Also, that one of her computers was lost in the mail. That they used acid to destroy the email that she was supposed to be turning over to the State Department. So, you know, maybe not so much telling the truth, but boy, is she convincing. I will give you that. Well, Donald Trump, of course, was on the hot seat, too, and he had a few things to say. He had a lot of things to say. You'll have to watch the video today to watch to be able to get a full feel of what it was all about. But Trump was ask about how he would handle national intelligence and also just handle ISIS, and this is what he had to say.
You recently received two intelligence briefings.
Yes, I did.
Did anything in that briefing, without going into specifics, shock or alarm you?
Yes.
Did you learn new things?
First of all, I had great respect for the people that gave us the briefings. They were terrific people. They were experts on Iraq and Iran and different parts of the world and Russia. But yes, there was one thing that shocked me. And it just seems to me that what they said, President Obama and Hillary Clinton and John Kerry, who is another total disaster, did exactly the opposite.
Did you learn anything in that briefing, again, not going into specifics, that makes you reconsider some of the things you say you can accomplish, like defeating ISIS quickly?
No, I didn't learn anything from that standpoint. What I did learn is that our leadership, Barack Obama did not follow what our experts and our truly, when they call it intelligence, it's there for a reason, what our experts said to do.
Howard.
And I was very, very surprised in almost every instance. And I could tell, I have pretty good with the body language, I could tell they were not happy. Our leaders did not follow what they were recommending.
All right, so that was one question that he was asked by Matt Lauer. And then he was asked another question about the generals. This is probably getting the most controversial coverage this morning about what he thinks about America's generals. Let's listen.
So let me read some of the things you said. I know more about ISIS than the generals do. Believe me. Was that the truth?
Well, the generals under Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton have not been successful.
Do you know ISIS, more about ISIS than they do?
I think under the leadership of Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, the generals have been reduced to rubble.
You know, you can criticize that, but I have to tell you, from my national security expert friends, and some of them in within the military, at least formerly, that they would agree that those people that sit in the Pentagon now at the Joint Chiefs of Staff table are really, truly a disaster, untrustworthy. Not a single one. I've asked the question, isn't there anyone left there that you trust? And the answer that I heard, it isn't a public poll, not polled by hundreds, but from some that I trust, no one. And so it's not that, you know, I'm sure that Donald Trump is hearing that same thing, and that's what he said last night to Matt Lauer. Now, Matt turned to Hillary Clinton, and of course, Matt is part of the Clinton Foundation. He's a member of the Clinton Foundation. And so there was a lot of speculation about how he would handle Mrs. Clinton and whether he would be hard on her. And I have to say, hats off to him. He really dug in on this particular issue, and I think we should listen. This is part one about the email.
Judgment is a key.
Temperament and judgment, yes.
The word judgment has been used a lot around you, Secretary mm-hmm. Clinton, over the last year and a half, and in particular concerning your use of your personal email mm-hmm. and server to communicate while you were Secretary of State. You've said it's a mistake. Mm-hmm. You said you made not the best choice. Mm-hmm. You were communicating on highly sensitive topics. Why wasn't it more than a mistake? Why wasn't it disqualifying if you want to be commander-in-chief?
Well, Matt, first of all, as I have said repeatedly, it was a mistake to have a personal account. I would certainly not do it again. I make no excuses for it. It was something that should not have been done. But the real question is the handling of classified material, which is, I think, what the implication of your question was. And for all the viewers watching you tonight, I have a lot of experience dealing with classified material, starting when I was on the Senate Armed Services Committee, going into the 4 years as Secretary of State. Classified material has a header which says top secret, secret, confidential. Nothing. And I will repeat this, and this is verified in the report by the Department of Justice. None of the emails sent or received by me had such a header.
Were some of the emails sent or received by you referring to our drone program, our covert drone program?
Yes, because, of course, there were no discussions of any of the covert actions in process being determined about whether or not to go forward. But every part of our government had to deal with questions, and the Secretary of State's office was first and foremost.
Okay, so that's the first part of that. We're going to listen to the second in just a second. But could I just interject that this much I do know. We know that when the classified information was transferred to Mrs. Clinton's private server, it wasn't just forwarded. They were separate servers. It could not be sent in that fashion. It had to be lifted off, like retyped, reset, and sent to her private server or entered onto her private server. They couldn't just forward it. And so that's where Huma Abedin and Cheryl Mills comes in and whoever else was working close to her. The allegation is that they took these classified pieces of information and just hand entered them into her server. And of course they didn't have the official markings on them. But that doesn't mean she did not know full well. Hopefully, you know, wouldn't you like to think that Hillary Clinton would know when something was classified just by reading it, that she could tell maybe that's classified. But of course, that she's pleading again her ignorance, which she has done for years, by the way. She wants to be regarded as the most intelligent woman in the world, which is what a lot of people said for years. I think she's not the most intelligent. She's just the most devious, the best liar. I might give her that. Yeah, I would give her that maybe. She's great, really. She's really a great liar. So is Barack Obama, though. So she's got some sort of competition here. But let's hear her further explanation as she twists and turns and beautifully delivers her latest set of lies to Matt Lauer. This is cut two.
So there is of talking about the drone program.
And you said you thought your communications on that were fairly routine.
Well, let me say the FBI just released their report about their investigation. They discussed drone matters in the unclassified section.
But Director Comey also said this after reviewing all the information. He said there is evidence to support a conclusion that any reasonable person in Secretary Clinton's position should have known that an unclassified system was no place for that conversation.
I just respectfully point to the hundreds of experienced foreign policy experts, diplomats, defense officials who were communicating information on the unclassified system because it was necessary to answer questions and to be able publicly to go as far as we could, which was not acknowledging the program. But I would be in Pakistan, as I was on several occasions. There might very well have been a strike. I would be asked in a public setting, in an interview, about it. It was known to have happened. We had to have an answer that did not move into classified area, and I think we handled that appropriately.
You mentioned you're in Pakistan. Some of the emails you sent and received happened while you were overseas, and Director Comey also said that while they have no proof, we assess that it is possible that hostile actors gained access to Secretary Clinton's personal email accounts.
Matt, there is no evidence. Of course, anything is possible, but what is factual is the State Department system was hacked. Most of the government systems are way behind the curve. We've had hacking repeatedly,
in
the White House.
Okay, that, enough. You get the point. Of course, really, it is kind of funny. There's no evidence that my emails were hacked. At the same time, they're waving all of this, their arms in alarm. The Russians are hacking. The Russians are getting into all of this. The Russians may be corrupting our voting system, which means we might have to come in and take over the voting system in the United States. But she, for her personal email and private server, there's just no evidence. And of course, you know, Julian Assange is saying from WikiLeaks, he's saying there's going to be another document dump coming up in the next, I don't know when, before the election. So, but it could not, you know, it couldn't possibly be her. There's no evidence that any foreign power hacked, right? Just maybe Julian Assange and the Russians. But other than that, you know, it's a short list. So it's interesting. She mentions James Comey, the FBI director, and he's in a bit of trouble himself. I have to say, you know, the FBI did, they released their notes and their records on the interview of Mrs. Clinton and the investigation, but they did it the Friday night of Labor Day, which is the traditional time when the left dumps documents they don't want anyone to see, because reporters leave for the weekend, people check out over the weekend, especially a holiday weekend, and it is, he's been going around the country, as I understand, meeting with FBI agents who have been reported that they've been really upset and embarrassed by the way the FBI has handled this, accusing their director, really, of certainly giving the appearance of being a political operative. And so he's saying, we don't play games. You know, oh gosh, that was just the when it came out, was the weekend of right before Labor Day. So we released it. There was nothing to see here. I'm not sure about that, and I don't think many of us are, and how sad for all of us if indeed even the Federal Bureau of Investigation has become corrupt. Coming up next, Frank Gaffney will join us because the Department of Homeland Security is up to their eyeballs in Muslim Brotherhood cooperation. We'll be right back.
How would you describe your health care? If you're like most Americans these days, the word affordable isn't top of mind. Well, here's some good news. there's actually a trusted healthcare option that is affordable. It's called MediShare. Unlike insurance, MediShare is Christian healthcare sharing, a community of more than 200,000 believers across America who share each other's medical expenses. It's about half the cost of insurance, and it's fully acceptable under the law. And here's the best part. Because MediShare is based on biblical principles, you never pay for things that go against your beliefs. MediShare is affordable healthcare for Christians.
Learn how thousands of Christians can help you save on your healthcare. For your free information guide, call 855-PSALM-23. Not available in Montana. MediShare, affordable biblical healthcare. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
On October 6th and 7th, College of the Ozarks in beautiful Branson, Missouri will host the Pensmore National Symposium on Religious Liberty. Confirmed speakers include Dr. Ben Carson, Liberty Institute President Kelly Shackelford, and from the American Family Association, Abraham Hamilton III.
The founders enshrined religious liberty as the first among the freedoms protected in the Bill of Rights because they recognized that the prosperity of the American Republic rose or fell with its religious freedom.
As our nation spirals into a deeper moral pit, this event may reconnect attendees with the intents of the Founding Fathers. It's high time Christians did something to preserve our liberties before they're lost forever. The Pensmore National Symposium on Religious Liberty is designed to inspire participants with a greater resolve through better understanding of the issue. The cost is $50 per person, and student admission is free. More information is available at afr.net.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with this Fox News and commentary next. How would you like to finish your degree online? Truett McConnell University makes that possible with their top-notch online program. You can even earn a master's in theology. For 70 years, Truett McConnell University has been preparing students to fulfill God's high calling on their lives, on campus or online. A degree that can not only change your life, but also your workplace. Truett.edu is the website. That's Truett.edu. Mackenzie Gill of Bossier City, Louisiana, turns 18 this year. She plans on casting her very first presidential vote for Donald Trump. Mackenzie decided to commemorate this monumental moment with a birthday cake made by the good folks down at Albertsons. She wanted an American flag cake with the words Trump 2016, but as television station KSLA reports, the bakery refused to include the word Trump, flat out turned her down. So Mackenzie and her mom had to go somewhere else to get that birthday cake. She wrote about the incident on Facebook and, well, as you might expect, it went viral. Albertsons released an apology, said something about a staff member making a mistake, said they'd be happy to frost the cake as requested. Even though she was denied her birthday cake, Mackenzie says it's all good, and she still plans on voting for Donald Trump in November. I'm Todd Stearns.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
As for 80 to 90% of the Jews in our times, they are Ashkenazis, i.e. Khazar, i.e. Russians, Turco-Russians. Look at them. White, crooked nose, blonde hairs. This is not the descendants of Yaqub. These are not a Semitic people. Look at them. They don't look like Semites. And they are not Semites. The majority of Jews in our times, 80 to 90%, and especially the Jews in Eastern Europe, almost 100% of them, all of these Polish Jews that Hitler was supposedly trying to exterminate, that's another point, by the way, Hitler never intended to mass destroy the Jews.
Oh, that's interesting. Little anti-Semitic rant by Yasser Kadi, who just happened to be on the program last weekend in Chicago, the 53rd Annual Convention of the Islamic State of North America, ISNA, along with the Director of Homeland Security, Jay Johnson. We mentioned this yesterday, and Frank Gaffney, our good friend whose commentary you hear every single day on this program, also talked about it. So I've asked Frank to join us this morning because there's so much to say and so much to expand and so much for you to be aware of the implications of this. Frank, good morning, and thank you for joining us. Oops. Did we lose him? You know, I'll tell you a little secret. Frank, are you there?
Sandy, I apologize. I was on mute.
I'm in a train, as you know, so I didn't want to have the background noise. Thank you for having me. It's great to be with you as always.
Oh, my pleasure. And I should say also, in case some of you are just tuning in for the first time in your entire life, Frank is the founder and president of the Center for Security Policy. Frank, and by the way, he's on a train, so that's kind of funny. Just so you know, if you hear neighbors talking, that's the reason. Frank, Yasser Qadhi, do you know much about him other than what I just said?
Truthfully, I don't know a great deal about him, but what I think you've rightly suggested is the company that he's keeping, as well as the kinds of quotes you just played, are pretty much what you need to know. He is an Islamic supremacist, as is the Islamic Society of North America, an Islamic supremacist organization. It happens that ISNA, as it's called, is the largest Muslim Brotherhood front organization in the United States. And it is all about what Islamic supremacists of other stripes and, you know, locations are about, which is imposing this brutally repressive totalitarian doctrine that its adherents call Sharia on everybody else, Muslim and non-Muslim alike. And so I think whether it's Yasser Qadhi or whether it is Tariq Ramadan, the grandson of the founder of the Muslim Brotherhood, or whether it is Ghazala and Khizr Khan, the Democratic National Convention fame, or these others, Dalia Mokahan, who are all featured guests at the Islamic Society of North America. We're talking about people who are deeply hostile to our constitutional republic, to our freedoms, and to our way of life.
I have in my hand, of course, this explanatory memorandum found the archives of the Muslim Brotherhood in America out of the Holy Land trial. Discovered in the investigation, entered as evidence by the FBI, and no longer really referenced except by some of us, Frank. And of course, as you know, as you have pointed out to me, on page 31, the very first organization listed on this list of co-conspirators with the Muslim Brotherhood is the Islamic Society of North America, whose meeting took place over the weekend, 53rd, by the way, 53rd American Convention, Frank? 53rd?
Yeah. Look, they've been at this, the Muslim Brotherhood, and what's so important about that little book, and by the way, Sandy, your audience is invited to download it for free at our website, securefreedom.org, or they can purchase it for a couple of bucks at Amazon. But this document is, I consider it the Rosetta Stone to really understand what we are facing at the hands of the Muslim Brotherhood. They say very explicitly in this secret strategic plan, it was never meant for our eyes. We found it through the grace of God, a truly providential traffic stop, for crying out loud. What they say is their mission in North America is, quote, destroying Western civilization from within by their hands, meaning ours, and the hands of the believers, so that Allah's religion is made supreme over all other religions, unquote. Now, that's what these guys are up to, and just a small correction, that document has as an attachment, as you say, at page 31 of our print, a list not of co-conspirators, a list of what they call, quote, our organizations and organizations of our friends, unquote. So this is the Muslim Brotherhood's own roster as of 1991, 25 years ago. They've been at it already at that point by, you know, some 25, 27 years. But here's the point, Sandy. Jay Johnson, the man who has the responsibility of his day-in, day-out job for protecting our homeland security, is consorting with enemies of our country, people who are sworn to try to destroy it. This is unimaginable. It is scandalous. And I just wanted to salute Congressman Steve King, Congressman Louie Gohmert, and Congressman Randy Weber for yesterday calling him out in a letter in which they said it was appalling what he was doing, that it wasn't just willful blindness, it was malfeasance, and urged him, in fact insisted, that he renounce this outreach to the Muslim Brotherhood. I couldn't agree more. He should renounce it or resign.
Frank, you know, I think I think it was Paul Sperry who wrote about it. That's what I saw yesterday, his article. He talked about how Jay Johnson was so delighted to be there. He wasn't there out of ignorance. I mean, people could say, maybe he just didn't know. But that's not true. No. He was bold and proud to be there. He said he was speaking. That's okay. I think he said, I'm speaking to millions of Muslims beyond this meeting. And of course, that in itself, the implications of Muslims everywhere listening to our director of Homeland Security by virtue of him appearing on that platform. Let me read, you alluded to this, a part of this letter that was written by Congressman King, Congressman Gohmert, and Randy Weber from Texas. It is astounding that the individual principally charged with defending the homeland would legitimize, let alone pander to, an organization or its proxy that poses a threat to our constitutional republic and its people. The fact that you have explicitly called for your appearance to serve as a precedent for other cabinet officials to do the same amounts not just to willful blindness about the nature of the enemy. It is malfeasance. So, Frank, this letter goes out, and do you know if any media outlets are picking up on this letter yet?
Well, I'm hoping they will. Counterjihad.com, of course, is a site we work with. Paul Sperry is its editor-in-chief, and I know we've posted it there. I was on Breitbart's radio program earlier this morning. I've got a piece going into them momentarily. I'm hoping, Sandy, I've tried to push this out to as many people as I can put my hands on at talk radio and in the media and elsewhere. This is a defining moment. It's something we urgently need to debate in the course of this election campaign over the next 2 months. You've done so much to help, call people's attention to it, but we need everybody else in the media, mainstream and otherwise, to do the same, because the American people are beginning to awaken to the reality that this idea that their leaders are at best willfully blind and at worst are actually enabling enemies inside our country is something we have to sort out and, I hope, repudiate as a people.
You know, I was in a meeting yesterday, Frank, later in the day, heard a lot of congressmen speak and senators, and one of them spoke about the dangers of our out-of-control immigration, not being able to vet the people that are coming in. And he was asked, of course, what the leadership in the House would do. How do you think they'll respond to this bill that you are pressing, that you're trying to, bring some order to this, to stop this out-of-control influx of people that we are taking care of financially, but that we have no idea who they are? And he said he just wasn't sure, and he wasn't necessarily optimistic. And the thing that struck me, Frank, is you and I are alarmed. We read this. It's a no-brainer. And American people are, too. You know that when you go out in the country and you talk about this, people flock to you and they want to hear more, and they are upset and they're agitated. They get it. The astounding thing is that the leadership of both houses of Congress are absolutely asleep at the wheel on this. I mean, you've got these three congressmen writing this letter. And why aren't they all writing this letter?
Well, Sandy, I heard something really troubling yesterday, and I think you were in the room, as a matter of fact, when I heard it, that we're told, and I don't know which member of Congress you're referring to, and I'm hoping it's not one of these, but I'm told that there are Republicans on Capitol Hill at the moment who are both actively working for Donald Trump's defeat and seek, with that defeat, to be able to repudiate the kinds of things that he's been calling for and campaigning on, whether it's, that we stop importing jihadists, for example, not just immigrants of various other stripes that may be problematic, but specifically jihadists, which is, I think, an eminently sensible thing, and that we, begin to rethink what we're doing on trade policies. We begin to rethink what we're doing with respect to the dismantling of our military and so on. Well, apparently there are Republicans who think we oughtn't be on that side, that we oughtn't stand for a sovereign America that is secure and able to determine who's coming into our country and preclude those who want to take it down from being among them. These are the sorts of things that, again, I hope the American people will have a chance to have an informed debate about and respond to in a way that will make clear we're not going down that particular road, whether it's under a sensible Republican leadership or that of the Democrats.
Frank, let me just interject. We have put this on our Facebook page many times. We're going to do it again. A link to this explanatory memorandum by the Muslim of the Muslim Brotherhood, and also securefreedom.org. We're going to link to your website. But let me just tell you, give you a story. I don't know if you've seen this morning, but this is the latest by Patrick Poole. Patrick says that there is a man named Gulmored Kalimov, who was the new ISIS military commander, whom the U.S. just days ago announced a $3 million bounty for. He was trained by the State Department in an anti-terror program as recently as 2014 while serving in the security service of Tajikistan. He replaces former ISIS commander, and it gives the name, who was also trained by the U.S. as part of the Georgian army and whom ISIS claimed was killed fighting in Iraq just this past July. But anyway, we know that they said that he was vetted. He was appropriately vetted. That was their official statement. And this is what he said at one point. Listen, you American pigs. I've been to America 3 times. I saw how you train soldiers to kill Muslims. We will find your towns. We will come to your homes and we will kill you. This man, now an ISIS military commander, trained and vetted by our United States powers that be, which just demonstrates how dangerous this is becoming, Frank.
Yeah, look, this is a prime example of the insanity, Sandy, of this whole idea that we can carefully vet these reformist Muslims and that it's okay if they're Islamists as long as they're, you know, not violent, or if they're violent, they're on our side. They're not on ISIS's side or Al-Qaeda's side. This is lunacy. And it's going to get Americans killed. And I'm afraid it's not just our forces overseas who are trying to protect us against this sort of thing. It's people here. And Sandy, I just can't say strongly enough how important it is that the public expose themselves to some of these facts. The little document that we've been talking about, the explanatory memorandum, thank you so much for putting a link up for it. As you know, this is a short, 30-page document. It's easy reading, but it gives you an insight into the absolute determination of people, not just the folks who were influenced by the Muslim Brotherhood, but the Muslim Brotherhood itself as an Islamic supremacist organization and infrastructure in this country, in Europe, and elsewhere around the world that must be defeated. There's no accommodating it. There's no, appeasing it. It must be defeated. And I believe that one other piece of legislation that's so important, and I hope your audience will get behind, is a bill that is aimed at designating the Muslim Brotherhood as the terrorist organization it is. Senator Ted Cruz is one of the sponsors in the Senate, and Mario Diaz-Colard in the House. There's been 64, I think, co-sponsors in the House. But these pieces of legislation, and a hearing that I think Congressman Scott Perry is going to be having on the 22nd of September about all this willful blindness and so on, are critically important teaching opportunities, and the public needs to learn and then apply what they learn in the elections coming up.
Well, yes, absolutely. And I think that would be the point here, Frank, is that people are saying, well, what can I do? Well, what they can do is understand this information and make sure that they vote accordingly when November comes, because this is not the only thing at stake, but it is really our very lives at stake, our very safety at stake. Our walls have been breached. And I would argue that many people serving in government are cooperating and breaching the walls themselves. We have to stop it. Frank Gaffney, Center for Security Policy, securefreedom.org. You can get the explanatory memorandum at securefreedom.org or go to our Facebook page for the link. All right, Frank, thanks so much. Be safe, and we'll talk to you
soon.
Thank you. Okay, Sandy Rios. Coming up next, we're going to talk about the Paris Agreement, the agreement that the president made with China. Illegal, many people are saying, so stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. As a new academic year begins, it's no secret that our nation's universities are training grounds in political correctness and liberal ideology. Yet one university is pushing back. Instead of stifling free speech, the University of Chicago welcomes it. The university's dean wrote to students that they are encouraged to speak, write, challenge, and learn without fear of censorship. Civility and mutual respect are vital, and freedom of expression doesn't mean the freedom to harass or threaten others. Academic freedom means that we do not cancel invited speakers because their topics might prove controversial, and we do not condone intellectual safe spaces where individuals can retreat from ideas and perspectives at odds with their own, unquote. If only more universities would allow a free exchange of ideas instead of brainwashing our youth, perhaps then Christians would once more be welcomed into the marketplace of ideas. This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson.
Is your success in life being stolen? Here's Pastor Jeff Shreve.
Unbelief is involved in every single sin. Why did Eve eat the forbidden fruit? Because she believed the devil's lie rather than God's truth. Hey, if you don't believe God, you'll never be a success.
Learn what real success can be like. Join Pastor Jeff Shreve on From His Heart each weeknight at 6 Central here on American Family Radio.
American Family Studios movies are now available on ChristianCinema.com. Family-friendly movies on demand. ChristianCinema.com carries movies that uplift and affirm godly values. Titles like A Portrait of America, I Am Potential, Life is a Civil Right, and Summer Snow. ChristianCinema.com is offering samples as well as their entire service for Apple TV or Roku download. It's American Family Studios movies and more at ChristianCinema.com.
With a ministry opportunity, here's Steve Tiber of 8 Days of Hope.
Last year in October, 25 inches of rain fell in the state of South Carolina. 16,000 homes had flood damage, and now you and I get a chance to bless them as they wait for somebody to come and help rebuild their homes. 8 Days of Hope 12, Black River, South Carolina. We expect thousands of volunteers from around the country to come to that beautiful state. You can come for 3 days. You can come for all 8 days. We love families. We need roofers and electricians and plumbers and carpenters. And we need people like me that are less skilled, but just are excited to serve somebody in need. 8 Days of Hope 12, Black River, South Carolina. Hope to see you there.
The trip is October 8th through 15th. Volunteer for a minimum of 3 days at 8daysofhope.com. And if you'd like to help but are not able to go, financial donations are also needed. Sign up or give at 8daysofhope.com.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Today, on the eve of the 15th anniversary of the 9/11 jihadist attacks, a conference will take place in Washington to examine whether we are safer now, a decade and a half later. Unfortunately, the selection of Homeland Security Secretary Jay Johnson to be its keynote speaker means it will be an exercise in the willfully blind, leading the blind. After all, Secretary Johnson has repeatedly shown himself to be clueless about the Islamic supremacism that's most immediately endangering us. Just last Sunday, he addressed, legitimated, and embraced a front group of the global jihad's leading edge, the Muslim Brotherhood. In response, Congressman Steve King, Louie Gohmert, and Randy Weber yesterday decried Jay Johnson's conduct as not just willful blindness, but malfeasance. They rightly called on him to renounce the Muslim Brotherhood and stop dealing with its subversive fronts. Amen. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Hey, Sandy Rios back with you. This is a story I did not get to last week, but I want to share it with you by way of introducing our next guest and our next topic, because this happened last week. Three professors co-teaching an online course called Medical Humanities in the Digital Age at the University of Colorado at Colorado Springs recently told their students via an email that man-made climate change is not open for debate, and those who think otherwise have no place in their course. These are their words. The point of departure for this course is based on the scientific premise that human-induced climate change is valid and occurring. We will not, at any time, debate the science of climate change, or will the other side of the climate change debate be taught or discussed in this course? Opening up a debate that 98% of climate scientists unequivocally agree to be a non-debate would detract from the central concerns of environmental and health addressed in this course. If you believe this premise to be an issue for you, we respectfully ask that you don't take this course, as there are options. The professors also note that this ban on debate extends to discussion among students and online forums. You can't talk about the fact that there might be some doubt about man-made climate change. Just no discussion, end of it. We also know that companies now are being fined. The courts are going after organizations that don't openly embrace global warming. And our president is one of the champions. In fact, this is what he said last week in China.
The United States and China are taking that step today as our two nations formally join the Paris Agreement. Of course, we could not have done this extraordinary work without the strong support of the Secretary General of the United Nations, Mr. Ban Ki-moon, who has been an outstanding leader on this issue as well. Now, just as I believe the Paris Agreement will ultimately prove to be a turning point for our planet, I believe that history will judge today's efforts as pivotal. For the agreement to enter into force, as has already been stated, 55 countries representing 55% of global emissions must formally join. Together, the U.S. and China represent about 40% of global emissions. So today, we are moving the world significantly closer to the goal that we have set. We have a saying in America that you need to put your money where your mouth is. And when it comes to combating climate change, that's what we're doing. Both the United States and China, we're leading by example as the world's two largest economies and two largest emitters.
You know what? That's enough. I would just correct him. He's putting our money where his mouth is. I think that would be a more direct description. You know, some people are saying that's an absolute fraud, illegal. It is a treaty. The Senate must sign off on it. Myra Nobel is the American. Well, he's a global warming skeptic. Yes, he is. But I guess we'd say climate change skeptic now. He's the director of global warming and international environmental policy at the Competitive Enterprise Institute here in Chicago. And I've asked him to join me this morning to just give us some insight. The president says this is going to be a turning point for our planet, Myron. Do you think that's true?
Well, yes and no. I think it's a turning point in the wrong direction. And I hope that some world leaders will start to wake up. The threat of this treaty, the Paris Treaty, poses to global flourishing and well-being for humanity. This is going down a path that will cost the world trillions of dollars for no discernible effect. So I think that the president is really all alone on this. He does not have the support of the Congress. And so I'm hoping once he leaves office, we can change course.
You know, Myron, I was just reading this morning in the Heartland Institute's Environment and Climate News newspaper, and this is what they say about, you know, much of the European Union's, I don't know, I guess the European Union signed on to this. And, of course, Brexit has changed all of that, and that's another discussion I'm going to ask you about. But they were reporting about Germany. They said Germany's climate protection and decarbonization plan has driven up electricity prices and is hurting businesses, jobs, and poor families. In response, Germany's building new coal-fired power plants and cutting back on its carbon dioxide reduction targets. And Poland is doing the same. So it sounds like they are ignoring the treaty. We can't call it a treaty. The agreement that signed.
Yes, we must call it a treaty, Sandy. It is a treaty.
Yeah, okay. I did know that, but I thought we weren't officially supposed to say that. But okay, so now the European partners are already breaking their agreement?
Yes and no. Germany does have incredibly high electric rates now, particularly for people, consumers, households. And it is causing the impoverishment of a lot of people in Germany. They have an incoherent policy. They're committed to making deep emissions reductions, and yet they know that the more windmills and solar panels they put up, the more backup power they're going to need when the sun isn't shining or the wind isn't blowing. And so they are building some new coal power plants. It's not clear to what extent they are committed to that. Poland, however, which has huge reserves of coal, and also is, you know, it's a poor economy. It's still recovering from the many decades of communist tyranny. It really is not on board with the European Union agenda, although Poland is going to be one of the ratifiers of the Paris Climate Treaty, because even though they don't like it and they don't like the energy rationing that's required, they can be bought off by the wealthier countries in Western Europe and essentially coerced through we'll give you this if you stay on board with the Paris Treaty. So they'll get paid off and they'll go along.
Myron, I think that, you know, because you know the topic so well, this seems very elementary, but when you're talking to millions of Americans who are, you know, they're doing their lives, they're not thinking about this, it's so abstract and so strange. Remember when Al Gore was pushing selling, what do they call those? Not indulgences, because that would be the Reformation.
Carbon credits.
Yeah,
carbon
selling
credit.
Carbon credits, you know, like you can fly a big plane and guzzle up lots of fuel if you buy a carbon. I mean, the whole notion is so bizarre, and they're trying to treat it with such seriousness. I think people have trouble understanding what's in it for the powers that be. Why is Barack Obama so hell-bent on this, and why is Angela Merkel, and why are the, you know, the European Union leadership so excited about causing energy prices to skyrocket in their countries, which is what our president promised us and will deliver? What's so exciting, and what's in this for them?
Sandy, I think that there are mixed motives and intentions here. I think there are people who truly believe that global warming is a crisis. It's here now, and we have to do whatever it takes to address it. And so the costs to the economy and to regular people who are having to pay much higher prices for their energy don't really count. I think there are people who see this as a way to gain control over the economy and over people's lives, and I think that you know, this is a socialist impulse, and so you see the socialists in Europe are very keen on it, and in this country. And again, I think you find people who can make money off it. The wind industry would not exist if it weren't for government mandates saying you have to have wind and government subsidies, so that people who look at their electric bill, they're not paying it all because taxpayers are paying part of that extra price for wind. So there are a lot of people. I mean, Al Gore is a classic example, I think, of all three motives. He believes it's a crisis. He hopes to get rich off it, and he is getting rich off it, and he likes the idea of having a government in control of people's lives.
What was the significance of the president speaking and including, and China signing on to this? My understanding, Myron, is, of course, China and I guess India, too, are two of the worst polluters on the planet in terms of, you know, volume and size and the number of people, and they don't have the carbon emissions testing and all of that. So why would China sign on to it, and what was the significance of having the president address it the way he did last week?
China, the Paris Treaty is an odd combination of things. It's an amendment to the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change of 1992, and the Kyoto Protocol is another from 1997. Was the first attempt to do this. So this time, instead of setting mandatory targets and timetables that countries had to sign up to for reducing emissions, they said each country should submit its own plan, and then we'll roll all these plans together, and that will be the treaty. So our plan is fairly ambitious, and it will be very costly. China's plan is that, well, we'll keep increasing our emissions as we become a wealthier and wealthier country, and at some point in the future, those emissions will plateau and then start to decline. So they didn't really promise very much in the way of sacrifice. And China is already the world's number one emitter of carbon dioxide emissions because China not only has the world's largest population, they now manufacture a lot of the goods that we in the United States and Europeans buy. And those goods, it takes, you know, a lot of energy to produce a new car or a new refrigerator or, you know, whatever kind of manufactured good you're talking about. So China is the world's number one emitter, and their emissions are going to continue to go up for a long time, whereas our plan is that our emissions are going to go down. So while we're becoming poorer, China is becoming richer. That's why China is signing on. Now, the president. The president claims, and the Secretary of State John Kerry claimed, that this is not a treaty, it's merely an executive agreement, and therefore it does not require ratification by the U.S. Senate, as the Constitution requires. Every other country in the world is submitting its instruments of ratification. They're sending a document that says, we have ratified it. The president just said, you know, so be it. I've decided, and we're now part of it. So what he's done is absolutely unconstitutional and illegal, and I hope the Senate will take that up.
Do you think they will? They don't fight on anything, Myron. I mean, I'm sorry. My very cynical laugh is what I probably am folding into almost every topic these days. But honestly, you think the Senate's going to stop him on anything?
Sandy, I live in hope, and we are having an election in November, which could dramatically change things.
Well, how could that be?
Donald Trump has said that if elected, we are out of the Paris Agreement. So if you take President Obama at his word that it's just an executive agreement, then President Trump could simply withdraw. Or he could submit the treaty to the Senate and say, hey, I don't think President Obama saying it's an executive agreement is right. I think it's a treaty, and I'm going to let the Senate decide. And, of course, the Senate will vote it down. So I think, you know, I live in hope. I agree the Senate has been disappointing under Republican control. But I think there are chances in the future here where we could make some progress.
Well, we should contrast that with Mrs. Clinton's position on this. What does she say about the Paris Agreement?
Oh, she's 100% for it. And, of course, she was Secretary of State when we had the last big meeting that was going to save the world in Copenhagen in 2009. And at that meeting, she came up with the idea, which saved the climate conference, the UN climate conference, from total collapse, to create the Green Climate Fund. And the promise is that by 2020, the developed countries, but not China, but the developed countries in Europe, the United States, Japan, Australia, so on, will provide $100 billion a year to the developing countries to help them reduce their emissions and deal with climate change. So you know, when she promised that in 2009 and President Obama promised it, 2020 was a long ways away. It's getting a lot closer. Yeah. And the question is, who is ever going to come up with $100 billion a year? Our share in the United States would be about $23 or $24 billion. And
Myron,
that's just the start.
Well, we're out of time, but that is a very clear distinction between the two candidates, no question about it. All of these things we must consider. Myron Ebell, Competitive Enterprise Institute. Myron, send us your latest article on this, and we'll put that on our Facebook page, okay?
Thank you, Sandy.
Thank you. My pleasure. At Sandy Rios in the Morning.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.